Now, the Minister of Economic Development, Ibrahim Patel, today tabled a written reply in the National Assembly to a question on alleged share price manipulation by persons linked to the Gupta family in respect of Oak Bay Resources and its impact on the Industrial Development Corporation. In the reply, Minister Patel reported to Parliament that the IDC board, following legal advice, has rescinded the restructuring agreement between itself, Oak Bay Resources, and other entities in the Oak Bay Group. The IDC asserts that various misrepresentations and breaches of warranties were committed by the Oak Bay Group. The IDC has tendered the return of its shares in Oak Bay Resources and has demanded repayment of an outstanding capital and interest due to it, totaling approximately 293 million rand. If that sum was not paid to the IDC by today, the corporation will initiate proceedings against the parties concerned to recover the amount. For the fallout and impact of this decision, I'm joined on the line by Dr. Iraj Abidian. He is the chief economist at Pan African Investment. Iraj, good evening. Thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you very much, Karima, and greetings to the listeners.
Now, the big question, of course, is Oak Bay doesn't possibly have the money to repay the 293 million.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting development in the sense that our IDC obviously has woken up a little bit too late, where Oak Bay has got no money, and to the best of my calculations, Oak Bay is insolvent. It's been delisted, it's got no sponsor, it's got no banking operation, and they've got some assets. So the bottom line of it is IDC would have to foreclose on some of the assets of Oak Bay, assuming that those assets are indeed worth 293 million.
Mm-hmm. What does it mean for Oak Bay itself? I mean, the company is already virtually, worthless in many ways. Surely the exposure for the IDC is bigger.
Of course, it really reflects very poorly on the IDC, and it's by the look of it. If I read in between the lines of the statement that issued by the minister, IDC has been hoodwinked to first lend them 250 million rand, and then they have been misled through this share manipulation to convert the debt into shares that were way overpriced through manipulation.
And so, do continue, Iraj.
No, and that means now, depending on the fine print, If there are personal guarantees, sureties, that IDC got from the directors and were from the owners, it might have recourse to other assets of the shareholders. And I think that is the our reading between the line, that we know they cannot pay, but we're going to go after the owners and those promoters who were the Gupta family.
Mm-hmm. What, in legal terms, will the IDC have as recourse to do precisely that, to go after other assets tied to the owners of Oak Bay?
Only if there are suretyship, if the directors, as part of the original loan and as part of the restructuring, if the promoters, the Gupta family and or whoever else, if they came and say, we want 250 million and in addition to the assets, we also give you sureties, then they can have, through those suretyships, they can have recourse. I'm obviously, as you know, as a commercial lawyer, but from the principles of business, I'm sure the Guptas would have made sure that they don't give recourse to anything else other than Oak Bay assets itself. I wouldn't, every day when I want to do a business, I'm not going to give surety for my other assets if I'm specifically looking at a given asset against which I want to borrow. On the other hand, IDC, like other bankers, they always ask for other suretyship, more than what the asset itself is involved.
Now, we know, of course, Oak Bay Resources delisted earlier this year when the share price was at about 5 rand 80, leaving the IDC with shares it could not sell. And at that point, the IDC already lost something like 90 million on the delisting alone.
Yeah, exactly. And this is really the last straw in a way. The delisting has cost them. That's why In this statement, they said they don't want to, they're giving back the shares. They want to go to the original debt before restructuring. They're basically reneging on the restructuring agreement on the ground that they were misled. And this is, I think, their legal recourse. They're going to go after the Guptas on that ground because they must have agreed to restructuring based on the bona fide of the share price. But yeah. Now that they've woken up and they realize that those share prices were being manipulated by Singapore or other places, then that opens up for them a legal crack to go after those who were involved in these shenanigans.
Now, of course, the like you say, this has left the IDC with egg on its face. It's also left the IDC with a serious a job of reflecting and introspecting on governance. And also, more importantly, we need to know who exactly the IDC gives money to. I see from the statement issued by Minister Patel, he says that the IDC has also taken a number of steps to address the need to strengthen governance and oversight. Following a request that I made to the board to reconsider its disclosure policies, it's decided, in the interest of transparency, to publish the names of all new beneficiaries of IDC funding on its website. It's an important decision, but it's a little late, isn't it?
That's right. The horse has bolted. The fact is, over the past 8 years, all of us who've been in this business, we found IDC becoming more and more politicized, meaning unless you have connection to the right people, projects do not get attention, funding applications are not prioritized, and so on and so forth. And part of that has been part of this broader picture of if you are not connected, you don't get access to anything. And this is not good for the IDC at all. It is a good step, but it's come at a price. The price of politicization of these financing processes is that this is the first $300 million that is going to be presumably going down the drain, but it's not the only one.
Mm, mm.
There are other ones that will now come out. Like more all other state capture cases, as soon as the crack is opened, more and more and more evidence comes out.
But now, it's good. Yeah. Now, this push for transparency is, of course, not confined to this development finance institution. It is also being pushed in relation to the PIC. As you know, there's been a very definite attempt to try and get the grabby paws of politicians are trying to extend their influence there. And because the PIC is in many ways this massive, massive vehicle. But there's a very opaque way in which the monies are invested there, and there's a push that there be greater transparency. Do you think that what has happened in the case of the IDC, particularly tied to the Gupta Links companies, that it could be the beginnings of a larger, almost reform process, if you like, where we are able to now get greater transparency on beneficiaries of funding at almost all of these development finance institutions?
Absolutely. Of course, one hopes that the PIC, not being a public fund, PIC is a fund of workers, it's really
yes.
a private fund, would have even more push for transparency and contestability. But there are other institutions, the Land Bank, the DBSA, National Empowerment Fund, NEF.
Yes.
And then you go below national, at the provincial level, there are agencies that are funded in order to promote different entrepreneurship and the small businesses and all kinds of job-creating objectives. The intentions are very good. They are very necessary. But the manner in which these funding agencies have been used absolutely sort of secretive, never mind open. It's just unprofessional and secretive, and a lot of it is wasted.
And of course, the secrecy isn't necessarily to protect the investment. It is often to protect the patronage networks and the links between the businesses to which the money is given and the politicians who sit in the value chain and who ultimately wield enormous influence over how these institutions make their decisions.
Absolutely. And in addition to that, it's also secrecy that covers up the incompetence of those who've been appointed to those positions. And these are all interrelated, because if you put somebody competent there, their competence and self-respect is a big shield against those who want to abuse and manipulate. So what happens is that they put incompetent people, there is in the network of patronage and secrecy, and these feed on each other.
Absolutely. Now, Iraj, this idea of the development finance institutions, state-owned entities, state-owned companies, these were the two vehicles that were meant to work hand in glove and drive the state's intervention in the economy. On paper and as ideas, it was a really good program to get behind. But what we've seen is a complete perversion, as you say, from incompetence to manipulation of the process, to patronage, to outright capture. And of course, all of that money is public monies in some instances. But it makes nonsense of the rhetoric around, the sometimes staid debate between private versus public, and of course also the extent to which the state gets involved in the economy. Because here there was a fantastic plan for the state to do precisely that, and instead of that, what you have is actually rapacious rent seeking.
Absolutely. That's why the rubric that was floated back in 2007, 2008, 2009 was the notion of developmental state. And developmental state was meant to facilitate, accelerate access to resources, job creation, entrepreneurship, skill augmentation, all these wonderful objectives, all of which now, 8 years later, turns out to have been nothing other than a cover for a network of predatory extraction of public resources.
For private financial gain of an elite.
For private financial gain. I mean, we to get to hollow out the balance sheet and the revenue stream of parastatals and development finance institutions, not even for private gain, a lot of it for private expropriation of funding. If some private individuals go and reinvested in South Africa, that's fine. At least some positive thing comes out of it. But when they hollow out and they send it to Hong Kong and they send it to Dubai and they send it from HSBC to Funny Islands or tax havens, that's a different really order of betrayal of national interest altogether.
Absolutely. And of course, it makes nonsense of the rhetoric around radical economic transformation. In fact, it exposes it as nothing but a cover for theft.